Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen, and today I am joined by my good friend Christian Castain, and I'm not sure what to call him because he's not on all the time, so it's hard to call him a recurring guest at this point, but guest John Butler. How you doing, John? It's been quite a while. It's been exactly 25 days since you were on our last show. You have been on 10% of our December shows. And we realize that you're a busy person, but at the same time, we feel slightly dissed. But, you know, we're glad to have you on.
I think you're the only one that seems to feel dissed. I haven't really heard much out of Chris about it. It's more from you, so.
It is.
But it is what it is. I mean, with the holidays and family birthdays and all that, it gets to be a busy schedule. But I'm glad to be back on, especially this close to the playoffs. It should be interesting.
Well, yeah, it should be interesting.
Well, Eric,
can we get some commitment that you will be on during the playoffs?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I mean, it's been a busy year. It's been a lot going on, but I'm ready to see what we can do in the playoffs here.
Eric doesn't celebrate Christmas. You have to remember that.
Oh yeah, to be honest with you, my Christmas day consisted of getting this mic and then starting to write playoff preview, and then writing like three other things yet to be published this week, plus recording something for myself, because I was like, I might as well just record myself for a little while and see what happens. But, you know, just in case I die and get famous and people are like, what was this guy's life like? And, you know.
Wait, how are you going to die and then get famous after that? I'm curious on how that would.
Well, exactly. Vincent Van Gogh or whatever, you know.
Yeah, but he great actually put something out beforehand, though.
Well, I mean, all my blog writings.
Also, it consisted of him calling me at 1 o'clock asking me if I was available to come on to test that new mic.
That is true.
I know good and darn well that's true.
It is. I live by the Bill Belichick saying of no days off. I truly believe in no days off.
That's for damn sure.
Mm-hmm. No days off. So anyways,
no days off.
Let's get into week 16. And let's start by throwing John for a loop here and talking about the Bears and Browns, because the Browns, I don't think it can get any worse than it got when they got blown out by the Bears. So John, what were your thoughts on this game, and what do you think about the whispers that Jeff Fisher is coming to Chicago?
That's only whispers from you. It's already been written down as of today, too, that Ryan Pace is going to have 100% authority over the next coach. I'm not too worried about it. I've seen reports that he's been studying coordinators for about the last 4 or 5 weeks. He's got a list already set. Nobody's really been able to reveal what those names are, but we know he's looking at a younger coach. Definitely an infusion of youth into this team with a young quarterback, young running backs in Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen, and it's definitely exciting because John Fox, it's been a weird decade for the Bears because they went from Lovie Smith, who was here for a long time, to a big weirdo in Mark Trestman just because of the fact that he was very touchy-feely and lost control of that locker room very, very quickly after the first year, to kind of a boring but stable John Fox. Even though he hasn't been great, we know it's been bad clock management and bad challenges and things like that, but it's really come down to the fact that John Fox it made the Bears look stable again. It made them look like a real program inside the locker room, maybe not on the field. But Ryan Pace is going to get a shot at hiring his own coach, whether it's the offensive coordinator from the Chiefs, who's looked really good ever since he took over play calling, or if it's a Saints offensive coordinator. We know he's looking at an offensive-minded coach right now just because you have the young quarterback in Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah, that's certainly an interesting thing. Now, Chris,
yep.
Before this ownership seemed to have all faith in Hugh Jackson, is there any way he stays in Cleveland, do you think, after this loss?
You go 0-16, it's just hard to envision, but with the new GM and stuff, I don't think it's impossible, but I wouldn't keep him after he's won one football game in two seasons. That's absolutely ridiculous. I think they need to flip the whole coaching staff in the off season, go in there with brand new. They need to have draft a rookie quarterback. They're gonna have to, because Deshaun Kizer isn't what they're looking for. This organization is just a mess. I know that, like I said, they've replaced the GM, but besides that, they've got a lot of work to do, and I don't think Hugh Jackson's the one for that team anymore, after what we've seen over the past two seasons. And with this 0-16 season, it means a lot. I mean, that's just terrible. Like, you can't win one football game, as many close football games as they've been in. It's just, you have to flip the coaching staff. I don't think that's coaching staff's capable of winning. I really don't.
I kind of agree with you. I'm going to step in and say a lot of it, though, too, is the roster. They've got a lot of these guys that are athletes that can play, that are athletic enough, but really look at what they've got. You don't have much of a running game in Isaiah Crowell. Duke Johnson's probably their best running back, I would say, because he's very flexible, great in the passing game, pretty decent rusher between the tackles, but they haven't had a quarterback. I'm trying to think of who they had 2 years ago. I don't know why I'm blanking on it.
Johnny Manziel?
2 years ago? I felt maybe. I know they played Cody Kessler.
Oh, 2 years ago or this year? Oh, no, last year they started Cody Kessler for most of the season. RG3 for a little bit, but he got injured. But last year it was mostly Kessler.
Right. And that's the thing, is I remember one of our guys, Brian Wills, saying that the Browns need to take Lamar Jackson as something different. But look at what the Browns have drafted. They've taken these second, third round, fourth round quarterbacks, hoping to find a diamond in the rough without trying to take a first round pick and go, okay, we got the top quarterback in the class. We picked who we thought was the top one. They keep settling for these fourth, fifth, sixth quarterbacks off the board. And we knew Kizer was going to be rough. We knew he needed some development. But there's just so many problems with this roster. Like I said, they've got some good athletes, but there's just so many question marks between the cornerbacks, the safeties. It's even on the offense. You've got Corey Coleman and Josh Gordon, sure, but I think this team just seems lost. And the other problem is when you're going into the draft and two of the top quarterbacks that are declaring for the draft saying they don't want to be picked by the Browns and they'll stay in college, and Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold, there's clearly an issue. It's not just, oh, hey, we don't want to go there. It's the fact that they clearly don't. I think part of it is they don't like the coaching staff and they don't like how the organization has been run, because it's been terribly run over the last decade plus.
Yeah, but for me, I find it so hard to go 0-16. I mean, that's what bothers me the most, is of how hard it is to go 0-16. Especially as many close games as they played. They played several close games, overtime games, and lost them. They find ways to lose. Like I said, I think this is more than just a roster issue. You can't lose that many games and think it's just the roster. In my opinion, I don't think it is. I think you have to flip the coaching staff and move on from Hugh Jackson. And even though I think he'd be a good head coach, I don't think he's the head coach for that team. I think he's a better offensive coordinator than a head coach, but I think he could be a head coach somewhere else.
Moving on, let's talk about some teams that matter. The Seahawks and Cowboys played a game on Christmas that the Seahawks had 2 total passing yards in the first half, but still ended up winning the game due mostly in part to Dak Prescott's poor play. And I think if there's been a story of a Cowboys season, it's obviously the Zeke suspension. But I think the other part is how much Dak has seemed to regress, it seems. As a Dak Prescott supporter, I've been pretty disappointed with this season. And I think with a new wide receiving core. I think they need to move on from Dez Bryant or add someone else in that passing game, because Dak really didn't have anyone to throw to down the stretch. Sounds like Jason Witten is going to retire this year. So they just need to retool the offense this year. They have two guys to build around, Dak and Zeke. But the Cowboys overall, a pretty disappointing season. On the other hand, the Seahawks, for me, I don't really like this Seahawks team, but I don't really like the other option for the playoffs in the Falcons either. So my question goes to you, John, because of course Chris is biased as a fan. Between the Seahawks and the Falcons, who do you want to see more in the playoffs?
Of course I'm biased.
Where'd I agree that come from? Of course Chris is biased because that's his team, but I would honestly rather see the Falcons. As much as I like Russell Wilson and what he's been able to do, the Seahawks, are just going to get stomped by anyone they meet, whether it's the Saints, whether it's the Rams, whether it's the Panthers. It's the fact that they're not the team they used to be. Russell Wilson can try and carry them as much as possible, but you're getting to the best of the best now. And unfortunately, there's going to be times where, especially no offensive line, no run game, barely any defense anymore that's healthy, it's not going to end well. And I would rather see a Falcons team that's at least healthy with Julio Jones, Devonta Freeman, Matt Ryan, and especially young guys like Grady Jarrett on the defensive line. I would rather see them in there because I think they can. They've been up and down all season, but they have that ability to turn on the offense once in a while. So I would much rather see the Falcons in the playoffs over this ugly Seahawks team.
All right, since I'm biased, I get to go last. I don't think, and this has nothing to do with me being a fan of the Falcons at all, I think the Falcons are the clear-cut choice between the two teams but I do think the Falcons are the better team overall. The Seahawks are just so injured on the defense, and then the offense isn't very good at all. I think, of course, you can say they played well, decently against the Cowboys, but really they didn't. They had 0 points at halftime. I mean, or 7 points, 3 points. It was a low score amount. I know the Falcons' offense is not good at all either, but they do have it. Like John said, they can turn it on every once in a while, and that's the difference for me. And the defense, Atlanta's defense is better than the Seattle defense. But I want to talk about the Cowboys. You were talking about all the things you said about the Cowboys, Dak Prescott, blah, blah, blah. I do agree with you with turning over the wide receiver corps. I don't like Dez Bryant anymore. He drops the football way too much. But the offense
that strip fumble on like the third drive of the game that really turned the game in Seattle's favor. The Cowboys were controlling the game really as far as yardage went up to that point, and it was probably the easiest strip fumble I've sure. ever seen in my entire life that Dez just put on the ground. Like, it was that was quite disappointing.
Yeah, I don't, like I said, I'm not a big fan of the overall receiver corps, but the offensive line in Dallas has been quite disappointing this season. We were talking about them as the best offensive line, not this season. I could argue them out of the top five this season, and I thought that offensive line had to be number one if the Dallas Cowboys were going to do anything. And it has not been. They've been one of the most disappointing, I guess, if you want to call it. They've been one of the most disappointing in the NFL this season. I just don't like it. And that's part of the reason why I would say I'm not going to fully blame it on Dak Prescott of why the Cowboys fell this season. It's a combination of the offensive line, Dez Bryant being just bad. I mean, there's not another word for it. He just hasn't played well at all this season. And the defense can't carry that football team. So that's why they missed the playoffs this season.
Well, and especially if you look at the offensive line, the biggest change that we saw was them losing Ronald Leary at left guard and then Doug Free at right tackle. Because you've got Jonathan Cooper who got slotted into left guard and they moved Lyle Collins out to right tackle. And it's made such a big difference. And Tyron Smith missing a few games this year has been huge. That offensive line, I think a lot of people really took Doug Free for granted. yes, he was 32 years old last year, but he was excellent as a right tackle for them, and he made such a difference on that line that Lyle Collins just can't.
Right, and I would agree with you. And also, Ty Smith did miss some games this season, several games, to be honest, so I will give them that as well. But overall, even with that, I don't know what that noise is, but...
It's my phone.
Okay.
It's the EVA notification. Let me turn it down. Oh, and of course, it's Eric. It's Eric in the chat.
Oh, my gosh. But yeah, even with all that being said, we overrated them, or I did at least. I'm not going to say
I
y'all
think
did.
Most people really did.
Yeah, because we thought they were going to be extremely good, but it wasn't extremely good. Also, and talking about the Seahawks, we thought the accusation of the Houston right tackle, I can't think of his name right now.
Dwayne Brown.
We overrated that. Yeah, we overrated that one too. As soon as that happened, I thought the Seahawks were Super Bowl contenders. Clearly not.
Well, it's a lot of it though too is because it's only one position on the offensive line. Yeah, it secures the line. It secures Russell Wilson's blind side, but you still have three other spots that are filled by either undrafted or late round pick guys. And that's especially where it comes down to it in the playoffs. Where we'll see it is these teams that don't have good offensive lines, and the games are won and lost in the trenches.
Yeah, I thought even that one move would be enough to short up enough to let Russell Wilson move some.
Alright, moving on to the Falcons and the Saints. Chris, I know you were out and about during this game, but I watched this game on Game Pass, and the Falcons offense couldn't have looked really any worse.
The Falcons offense was horseshit.
And I just don't understand why they don't use Julio Jones anymore. Like, he's a top five receiver in the league, and they don't target him. Like, and you see the immediate results. The games where they throw to him like 14, 15 times, and they just work him like crazy, they blow teams out. But then they try to get all fancy and use all these other receivers like they did in the Kyle Shanahan offense. And it doesn't work out because that's not the offense they run anymore. Taylor Gabriel is a system guy. He's not a good wide receiver. I don't understand why they don't target Julio Jones.
Well,
that's
not where
the Falcons offense.
That's not where I stand with that. Devontae Freeman only had 11 carries, 11 runs. That's ridiculous. He should have at least around 20, I would say. 20 to 25, that's one thing that they're messing up on. Number two, Julio Jones. When Julio Jones gets a lot of, like, I know Julio Jones had 149 yards, I understand that, but still, he only had seven catches. That's not going to be enough for the Falcons. And one of them was probably a long yardage catch. I can't confirm that, but I'm sure it was. So that's number two. And then number three is Mohamed Sanu. Like, he's good, but they need to use Mohamed Sanu and Julio Jones a lot more than they are now. But for me, most of all, it's Devontae Freeman. They're not using him as much as they should. I think he's the, besides Julio Jones, he's the best skill position player on the offense that they have. And they're not using him to their advantage, so that's why they, of course, only scored 13 points. Quite disappointing. But I would give credit to the Saints' defense. Marshawn Lattimore, he's, of course, my Rookie of the Year and possibly Defensive Player of the Year. You can keep on going back and forth for player recognition, but that defense has been... That is the most improved defense this year in the NFL. And we all, I'm sure we all believe that, or one of the top improved defenses of the NFL season. That's who I would credit more.
Right. So, on the other hand, the Saints continued to do what the Saints do, which is dominate teams. And
right.
I like the Saints. Like, I know that I feel like they're somewhat underrated going into the playoffs, but if you look at all the teams in the NFC, I think they, far and above, have the most playoff experience of anyone in the playoffs. So, I'm not quite sure where I would put them as far as ranking them, and we'll talk about that early next week. That'll be one of our shows. We'll do a playoff teams ranking, but I just feel, I got a feeling that the Saints, even though they're kind of slept on, I feel like they could make a run down the stretch here.
I agree with you there. They're honestly probably my favorite for the Super Bowl out of the NFC. Just because you have Drew Brees, you have that running game of Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram, which nobody can seem to stop. Which, on top of that, then you still have Ted Ginn, who can go deep. You've got Michael Thomas, who's one of the most reliable receivers in all of the NFL. And it's out of, especially when it comes down to it, you're going to need a quarterback to produce a game-winning drive at some point. And out of all the quarterbacks that are in the NFC right now, I've got to trust Brees. He's been able to do it before, and that's what he built his career on. So, and on top of that, one thing I will say, I know I kind of missed it, but you were saying, why don't they use Julio more? Unfortunately, he's been shadowed by Marshawn Lattimore the times that they've played. And even the first game they played when the Falcons won, he still held them to about 5 catches and 60 yards or something like that. It's one of those things that they really haven't used Julio the way they should all year, but I blame a lot of that on Sarkisian. But getting back to it, I think the Saints are, I do believe they are a bit underrated. I think a lot of it's just because the flashiness of what the Eagles were, the flashiness of the Rams, and the Saints really are just a solid all-around team.
Well, yeah, it's just the reason they're underrated is because of what they've done in the past couple of years. That's why I think they're underrated, in my opinion. That's why they're underrated. It's not really what they've done this year. And I'm not saying that's right, but I believe that's why. I don't think they should be the favorite to go come out of the NFC. But I do think that just too many defenses that are so good in the NFC between Minnesota's and the Eagles, and I think those defenses will be able to shut the Saints down. And even though the Drew Brees is the most experienced in the playoffs and regular season in the NFC, besides maybe Cam Newton or Matt Ryan, probably Matt Ryan more than Cam Newton, but I think the Rams should be the favorite to come out of the NFC, and I've been saying that all along. As of the past couple of weeks, since they've came along or came about as even a contender, I just think they have more pieces on the offense, and their defense with the
the only thing for me about the Rams is that Goff is still, he's looked very, very good in regular season. I will give him that credit, and Sean McVay has done wonders for that team.
Right.
But when the pressure's on, especially a late game drive, I have more faith in Brees than I would Goff or any of his pieces, just because of the fact that it's just that experience in the playoffs is huge, and especially Brees knowing what he has to do and how to read defenses himself.
Well,
can we save this more for our other show, because we're not here to talk about the Rams yet. Can we move on to our next game?
No.
No.
I don't care. Move on.
Moving on. Okay. Moving on. The Jaguars and the 49ers. Jimmy G tore apart the Jaguars defense, which is, you can take that two of two ways. One, that Jimmy G is an excellent quarterback, a top 10 quarterback currently, and probably of all the quarterbacks, even the injured ones, I'd put him in the top 11.
Tweet.
And probably at 10 or 11. And the 49ers are a good team. I've said it here before, I'll say it again. I think the 49ers are making the playoffs next year. I'm getting ahead of it right now. I'm going to keep hammering that all the way through the offseason, and then when I'm right, you know, I'll be able to say I have this take all the way back in December. But the other part of this that's kind of concerning is that the Jaguars' defense got torn apart. And as a team that I believe can go to the conference championship, I think I lost a lot of confidence in the Jaguars because they didn't necessarily play bad defense, but when they got down, they looked like a team that had not been there before. They were fighting each other on the sideline. There was all kinds of drama between Doug Marrone and some of the defensive players. They just looked like a team that, and this is fair because they haven't, they looked like a team that hadn't been there before, and that worries me kind of going into the playoffs.
Well, what I'll say about that is that defense is built to play from ahead. They're not built to play from behind. They're built to be able to rush the passer, get to the quarterback, get those interceptions, be able to be aggressive. And when you fall behind, you really can't. You've got to be able to play it safe. And they played a lot more zone than I expected because of the way that the 49ers lined up. They stayed more in a traditional offense. They didn't spread out as wide as often because they knew they weren't going to win there. They kept the Jaguars more in a base package, which allowed them to be able to do a lot more. Allowed them to trick the defense a little bit more between running and passing. And a lot of it was the fact that when you keep the Jaguars in their base package, you're making them not be able to play the way they want to play. You're dictating what they have to do, and it clearly didn't work. And a lot of it was Bortles' struggles of not being able to find his receivers when they were open. I mean, the 49ers defense is okay, but they're nothing special, especially in the secondary. And when Bortles is throwing that kind of, he's that off on his game that day, that defense is going to struggle because the offense can't stay on their feet.
Well, you can't, oh my goodness, I think you overrate, if you say, if you can't say that Jimmy Garoppolo's Tom Brady and then say that this is, this, for the Jaguars defense, this, for you, this is probably means, this probably gives your take more, that we should take this take more seriously, that Jimmy Garoppolo is going to end up being the next Tom Brady. But besides that, back on topic, the other topic, I think this was one game. Let's give it a break. Let's see what happens against the Titans, even though I'm not sure if they're going to bench their players or not. But if they don't,
it doesn't sound like it.
But if they, like,
the Titans are in a must-win game right now. They do have to win this week to make
the playoffs. I'm talking about the Jaguars. If they don't, if they end up starting all their players, I want to see what happens. Like, I don't, I've seen them play too many good defensive games to take this one game for granted, or take this one game too seriously. And I'm kind of confused with what Eric, you said one of two things. Which one are you leaning towards? The Jaguars defense is, we're taking it too legit, or is it Jimmy Garoppolo? What's your take?
I said one of two things.
You said we can take it as one of two things.
I believe in both. I think the Jaguars defense, I may have slightly overrated them.
Okay, yeah.
I'm still sticking with my Jimmy G take.
I know you are. You're not going to take that away. Well, even though it's wrong, but
something I will say about Jimmy Garoppolo is he's pretty much a rookie in the sense that he's never really played a full season. But he looks like a real quarterback in the sense that he's been sitting behind Tom Brady. He's been sitting behind a real quarterback, working with a real coaching staff, and putting in the work. He's been putting in the time, whether we saw it or not, to be able to read defenses, know where to go, where the holes are on blitzes. And he's proven that so far. He's definitely going to make a lot of money this offseason. And I think the 49ers ended up getting a steal in trading just a second-round pick for Jimmy Garoppolo, and they took advantage of the situation.
But we can't confirm. You can't confirm that.
No.
Oh,
of course not. I mean, there's still a lot to be proven, but it's trending in a good direction for the 49ers. If they got this right, they have a lot of picks and a lot of flexibility in this next draft to be able to put pieces around it.
Right, but and but they're not winning 5 Super Bowls with Jimmy Garoppolo, or I didn't think so.
All right, well, what are you guys to? How are you guys?
You're too busy on Twitter. You're too busy on Twitter.
To say it's not possible, though, you gotta have some.
It's not possible.
Look at how long it's taken Tom Brady to win 5 Super Bowls himself.
Yeah,
I will say that.
Maybe Jimmy G's better than Tom Brady.
Yeah,
I've
you
said that
it.
Before, and I'll say it again.
Yeah, you're not taking. You're not taking that take back. It's there. You can't take it back as many times as you've said it.
Yeah, I'm never gonna take it back because I'm living with it. And when I'm right,
same thing you said about. Well, remember when we had this conversation about? Well, we didn't have the same conversation, but about Trevor Siemian. Remember when you said he was good and I said he wasn't, and not very good.
I said he would. Yeah. All right. You win. All right. Another. Let's transition to another bad take I had. The Chargers.
Don't they talk about that football team?
Well, I just want to talk slightly about this game because the Jets played really, really well. But at the same time, the Chargers can't seem to score when they get in the red zone, which is a problem, especially going into the playoffs. And I can just see myself. I need you guys to ground me. So I'm here, and I'm giving you all three possible scenarios. But I need you to remind me that the Chargers just aren't that great a football team. Because what's going to happen is either this week I'll get really excited about the Chargers and I'll completely buy in, and the Chargers will charger and lose to the Raiders, or they'll win by a lot against the Raiders, and then I'll get way excited and I'll be like, oh my god, they're going to the conference championship, and for some reason I'll pick them going to the conference championship and then they'll get smoked in the first round, or I'll get really out on the Chargers on Friday and then I'll be like, and then they'll really succeed and I'll be like, well, why'd I get out on them? So it's a lose-lose scenario for me, but I don't know where I stand on the Chargers.
No, right. I need you to be in on the Chargers. You can't just go out on them. No. You're not going. No.
Like
get
in
on the Chargers.
The
I need you to get in so they will lose the football game and my prediction will stand correct. That's what I need you to do. That's what I want you to do.
Well,
that's what I expect.
So for me, a lot of the issue with the Chargers is the fact that, like you said, they're terrible in the red zone. A lot of it is the receivers are okay. Keenan Allen's been really good this year. I'm glad to see him be able to stay on the field. But outside of that, Hunter Henry's been banged up, which really kills the red zone offense. Antonio Gates is a shell of what he once was. And the rest of their targets are okay. None of them are really red zone targets. Melvin Gordon's been banged up a lot this year, and I think a lot of it also comes from the fact that they've struggled at the offensive line. There's a lot that the Chargers could do and they had potential for this season, but it's either been bad offensive line play or defense just not stepping it up when they had to. They've had their issues all year for whatever reason.
Well, I would say
it's the thing they always tend to do every year is they'll look good,
right.
They play one full game, and then next game the offense is bad, and there's just not a lot of firepower there for as good as they could be.
Right. Well, I will say I was wrong about the fact that the Chargers, I thought they were just going to be, the oldness of the Chargers was going to get to them. That's what I thought. And I was wrong about that. It wasn't the oldness, especially at the beginning of the season. It was just a missed field goal here or there. or multiple missed field goals, really. But for me, it's just, like you said, missed opportunities. Multiple missed opportunities, especially in the last game. And they're in the fourth quarter, they're not very good at all. I don't like them in the fourth quarter. For me, this is more of a, I think they have potential. They have a lot of potential, but they don't take it. Like, I don't know the correct way of saying this, but they don't take the potential and run with it. They go a different route, or something goes wrong, and the fourth quarter normally. I'm not just going to reference this game. Remember the Browns game? Like, I know that game was a 10-point game, but they nearly lost They nearly lost that football game in the fourth quarter because they choked.
It was a lot closer than the score really showed.
Yeah. It all happened in the fourth quarter. Their fourth quarter game management is absolutely awful. But with that team, as much firepower as they can have, they can go on runs. They can go on offensive runs. Their defense is a little better than average, so that's why I give them a chance. But I don't like them because of their fourth quarter game management. It's just not very good.
All right, moving on to a new segment I like to call 3 minutes, and this will be timed, 3 minutes to determine what the hell is a catch. So the Bills and the Patriots played. Nothing really exciting happened other than the Patriots blowing out the Bills, but the game really shifted on a Sammy Watkins touchdown that was called back because apparently he didn't maintain control of the ball even though he had both his feet down, and it went to replay. So you guys could talk about replay, you could talk about whether it's a catch or not, what they need to do to fix this crap. But starting now, 3 minutes, what the hell is a catch? I'll start with John.
Do you want to remind me whose catch that was?
Sammy Watkins.
Sammy Watkins. Oh,
lies.
The Rams.
Lies. Kelvin Benjamin. I totally forgot.
I don't know. A lot of it is the fact that the NFL, the rule is actually pretty simple when it comes down to it, but it's the fact that they're making... A lot of it comes down to the fact that we're using instant replay. We're breaking down frame by frame by frame, and we're waiting for that split second that the ball moves the tiniest bit. And unfortunately, that's just part of moving with technology. It's the fact that we are able to overturn calls that are clearly wrong, but because of the fact that we have that technology, we're using it and breaking it down so close to the millisecond, and it's getting overturned just because of the fact that they want to make it right, quote unquote. When you're able to delve that close, it's sort of like head-to-head hits when we see it. Everybody starts putting in tension on, oh, well, this was the very millisecond that he decided he wanted to hit him in the head or whatever else. It's unfortunately a downside of the technology that we have now. But unfortunately, it's a lot of common sense that just doesn't seem to be in the game as well. It's the fact that they want to have it for a league that really wants to have offense where at the peak, they always try and make these calls to halt the offense for some reason. They always seem to go the opposite way. You would think with the NFL wanting as many points as possible on the board that they would kind of be more lenient on these catches, but they're just not.
Right, for me, for me, it comes down to, I do agree with you, John, in certain ways, but if, you have to use replay, if you go one way and you don't look at that replay, millimeter by millimeter, they're gonna get you. If you do look at it like that, for me, if you do not have firm control of the ball at all points as soon as your 2 feet touch the ground, if you have the control of the ball, that's a catch. That is a catch.
All right, and that is. And I had two. What the hell was a catch? Yeah. So yeah, so that was 3 minutes. Very nice catch talk, guys. But we will. We'll have to be back. That was my air horn through my Bluetooth speaker. We don't know how to add drops yet.
So you didn't say. You didn't say three minutes together. You said 3 minutes. I thought we meant 3 minutes.
The segment was literally called 3 minutes to determine what the hell is a catch.
Yes, but you didn't say we had 3 minutes together.
All right, moving on.
No, we're not moving on.
The Panthers and the Bucks. The Bucks almost won this game.
Yes.
but Cam Newton came through in the clutch. To me, this was more the Panthers just being a little bit tired and the Bucks playing for their coach. I don't think we could take a whole lot of away from this game, but Chris, it sounds like you're opinionated about this. Why don't you tell us?
Repeat yourself.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you thought about this game?
The Panthers and the Bucks? There's not a whole lot to talk about in this game. Honestly, I didn't think we were talking about this game, but really, for me, this didn't mean a whole lot. You're going to have your struggles in games. I actually thought that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers played better in this game than they have in the past.
If you horn again.
Somebody forgot to turn it off.
No, he on purpose. I don't believe that. He on purposely did it. Now I lost my thought. Now, all right, Eric, what you got to say about the game? Now you got to come up with your whole thought right now.
The Panthers are a team that I still believe in heavily.
How can you believe in them after that game? That's one of my issues. Is you play the Buccaneers that close at this?
Yeah, but the Buccaneers are better than what their record is. In my opinion, they are.
To be fair, Jameis Winston.
I'm gonna continue to interrupt Eric.
Jameis has played his best games of the season over the past 2 weeks. That's why I still believe in the Panthers. I mean, I think come playoff time, it all resolves itself. Yes.
Am I going? Oh, okay. I didn't know if I was going. I didn't know if you were going to continue to interrupt. I'm back now. Like I said, I wouldn't overrate this game because I do think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are playing a lot better than we. Since I lost my thought before, I thought the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have played better within the past 2 weeks than we've seen them play all season long. I think Jameis Winston's finally coming back into together, even though the defense is absolutely awful. Yes, I do agree with that, but all in all, I think I'd give credit to Mike Smith, to be honest, the defensive coordinator for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers over the past two games, for being able to put this kind of defensive effort up, and because I did see them do the same thing against the Falcons a couple weeks ago. It was pretty impressive, similar stuff. But yeah, I don't take too much away from this game. We've seen Carolina be up and down for the most part all season long. They'll have two. I'm waiting on the horn again, by the way. I expect them. They'll have two good games and they'll have a bad game. I expected this. I'm not shocked at all. I'm not gonna say I expected it, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the takeaway from this game. All right, let's close the show out by talking a little bit on this script that we have here. This year, I think a record number of coaches could be fired. Almost about half the league, if you can believe it. Oh, well, very well done. I like the sound horn. I'm unfazed. I'm a professional.
I will say I agree. We honestly could see half the league change at this point. As I was kind of talking about it on Twitter the other day, and it's really ridiculous how many of these coaches could be fired coming next Monday, which is officially known as Black Monday, but it's one of those things that we know there's always a giant turnover in this league. Every year we usually see 5, 6, 7 coaches outed just because they underperformed or they had the talent and they just couldn't live up to it, or they lost a locker or whatever it may be. But the fact that, like you said, we may see half the league get rid of their coaches and try and go to these younger coordinators after seeing what McVay has done. I mean, you never know.
All right. So that brings us to this a little. You don't have to choose someone on this list. But let's go around and let's start out with two guys that are definitely on the hot seat. And that we think will be fired, and then we'll go around again, and we'll talk about one guy that could surprise us. So we'll go around Chris, John, and Eric. So we'll start with you, Chris. Who is your coach on the hot seat?
I'm going to have to do this very carefully because I don't know if I'm going to have a horn blown in my ear or something. So I'm going to go for a hot seat. For me, I'm actually going to pick this list. Obviously, Hugh Jackson should be one because the Browns have been so bad. I'm not really going to get into that one because we talked about that earlier. That's the one of the top. That's top two for sure. And then Chuck Pagano. I know you said the Colts have played as one of the top better teams with under five losses. But still, I knew that was gonna.
John. So this went poorly through the first time. So on air, kind of. Recording. We're gonna go. Chris, you'll get one more, but let's start with John. John, just give us one, and then I'll do it, and then we'll throw it back up to Chris. He'll do one, and then we'll go down again. That's kind of how I envision.
Oh, you didn't interrupt me.
Bad podcast. Bad radio by us.
So, by you.
Obviously, one guy that I think is gonna be fired is John Fox. There's nothing left for the Bears to really keep there. I think it's been writing on the wall ever since that Packers loss to Brett Pump. Especially coming off the bye. There's no way that he sticks around. There's no reason, no way the Bears re-sign him or keep him around.
Yeah, I think that the coach I'd choose that I think is on the hot seat, and this one, I don't know if you can consider this a surprise or not, but I'd go Jim Caldwell. The Bears, I know
really?
They had all that fourth quarter magic last year, but to be honest with you, like, they have a good enough team that they shouldn't have to come back in every single game. And I think last year was a pretty bad coaching job by him. I think a lot of it has to do with Jim Bob Cooter and the way he's coached up Matthew Stafford. And I'd say if they fire Caldwell, I think Cooter could get the head coaching job and they'd stay in-house because that's the way Detroit tends to do things. So I think Jim Caldwell is a guy who's really on the hot seat and who I wouldn't be shocked if they fired him, especially because when it came down to it, you lost your biggest game of the year to one of the worst teams in the league. Chris, you sounded a little bit surprised by that take. Why?
I think the take's ridiculous because remember when we predicted them to go 6-10 and we said that team wasn't going to be any good?
We said 6-10. I had them at like 9-7.
I predicted that they would.
Well, some of us did. Either way, I knew that I predicted them to be bad. You did not predict them to be 8-8. Stop it. Don't try to confuse me. I'm just surprised by that take because the Lions aren't a bad football team. They lost one football game. You can't say that he should be fired just based off one game. That's utterly ridiculous. Last year they went to the playoffs. I think his seat's cold, to be honest. But for my second coach, I'm gonna take Chuck Pagano. The only reason he'll get a pass is because of Andrew Luck's injury, but I think he should be gone because even with Andrew Luck out of the lineup, even with Andrew Luck in the lineup, I don't know what that noise is, but anyway, with Andrew Luck in the lineup, they still haven't played well at all. That's why I would say they're like .500 team when Andrew Luck's in the lineup. We've seen it. He should be gone, but he probably won't be. That's my second coach.
I'd agree with you on that. I could definitely see.
What is that noise?
That's probably my wife leaving with the keys.
Oh, okay.
But Chuck Pagano.
Hi, Miss Butler.
Chuck Pagano could definitely be gone, and it wouldn't surprise me, nor would I blame the Colts, because they've got so many issues on that team, especially on the defensive side of the ball. I think Pagano's kind of run his course. I forget how long he's been there, but it feels like it's the end of times there for him. There's not a whole lot that he's done to make them a special team. And I really don't think there's a lot of that many special coaches in the league either that really are game changers. So why not try and give it a shake, try and bring somebody else in, especially with the way that the season's gone. You have a decent prospect of a quarterback in Jacoby Brissett in case something happens to Luck again, but right now you kind of need a shake-up, so I think Pagano could definitely be gone.
Yeah, I'm the girl. Oh, go ahead. No. I forgot you got two. Never mind. Go ahead.
The next one for me that could be a big surprise, really, is Bill O'Brien. I don't think he should be gone, but I could definitely see the Texans wanting to move on from him just because of the issues that they've had this year and the last couple of years. But a lot of it's been injuries, especially to guys like Whitney Mercilus, J.J. Watt, Deshaun Watson. But, I mean, sometimes it's just the way the front office thinks. I don't think Bill O'Brien should be gone, but I could definitely see it happen.
Well, I don't think I don't see where you come up with that from, because Bill O'Brien, when Deshaun Watson was in the lineup, the Houston Texans were going to win that division. It was, in my opinion, it was clear cut. Deshaun Watson is so good. I mean, he's probably would have been the top rookie and quarterback in this draft. I think that's fairly clear.
The front office is talking about a shakeup, though, from the sources that I'm seeing. It's the fact that they kind of want to see something else. They're disappointed with the fact that they've had these last few down years. But like I said, I don't think it should happen. I honestly don't. But if the front office thinks that's what they need, that's what they think they need. A lot of it, though, has been injuries, whether it was Watson or Watt or Mercilus. It's been terrible for them in terms of injuries and bad luck. Bill O'Brien shouldn't be gone, but it might happen from the sources that I have.
I just think that'd be crazy to get rid of Bill O'Brien. I just literally can't come up with a reason. Their defense has been pretty good, not this season, but in the past seasons they've been pretty good. Eric, would you like to join back in on the conversation?
Yeah, I would. Part of the reason that Bill O'Brien was... Part of it was last year at the end of the year, Bill O'Brien said to several unnamed sources that he didn't want to be the Texans coach anymore. And a lot of that was out of frustration, but I think at this point Bob McNair is saying, if we get rid of Bill O'Brien, we are the top coaching spot. Any coach in the league, anyone we want, would love to come and coach Deshaun Watson for the next 5 or 10 years and see what they can do with him. So I think it's more likely than what you're saying. My other guy, my second guy who's likely, I think, to get fired, even though I don't know how I feel about it, is Vance Joseph. And a lot of it stems from John Elway not being a patient GM. He's shown this before. He had John Fox for a while, and even though Fox took them to the playoff, won the division 4 years straight, eventually Elway just said, you know what, I'm tired of not winning championships. I'm going to fire him and get him out the door. Gary Kubiak, it was retirement, but at the same time, I think Elway really expected that this team was going to be able to make the playoffs. And a lot of it is his fault that they don't have a quarterback to sustain them. But I think, especially if the Chiefs' backups beat the Broncos on Sunday, I think Vance Joseph is out in Denver.
Yep, it's too much off of one football game. Oh, my goodness. That's one football game. They're not getting rid of him off. Like, I don't understand this. Like...
Well, no, but based off the whole season.
Yeah, but you said the conclusion is the one football game.
Chris, you got to realize, they haven't had a losing season since 2010. And they haven't had an 8-game losing streak since 1967, the year they came into the league. So it would not shock me at all if Joseph is gone if they don't win this game Sunday.
You're not allowed to finish that take.
I personally wouldn't put it all on Vance Joseph. They've got no quarterback that's league average.
Right,
Trevor Siemian's okay.
That's,
Brock Osweiler.
That's not
Brock Osweiler. Paxton Lynch has shown nothing, which is ridiculous for a guy of his pedigree of being taken in the first round, albeit late first round. But it's the fact that a lot of it stems down to it in the NFL. Quarterback is the most important position out of any sport. And it's the fact that you don't have somebody that is a game changer there. And unfortunately, then that means the box gets stacked. It takes away your run game. And it means that a lot of teams can play man-to-man, even against good receivers like Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas. And it just kills everything else that you want to do on offense. When you have no good quarterbacks, it makes a big difference. Look at the Texans when they went from Deshaun Watson to Tom Savage. Everything fell apart again. Look at what happened to the Packers when Rodgers went down and they had to go to Brent Hundley. We've seen it all across the league this year where main quarterbacks going down that are way above their level just make that big of a difference. I know that it's Vance Joseph has not been great, but I just don't think that he should be on his outs just yet.
I need to defend myself first. First off...
What?
Love it.
Chris, are you going or am I going?
Defend yourself. Defend yourself. You need to defend yourself.
All right. Okay, one, I think John misunderstood what I said. I don't think Vance Joseph should be fired, but I think that John Elway
is... You just
said
you think he should be fired. Or no, you're just predicting,
I said
that. Predicting that he might be fired. Okay.
I said he might be fired because John Elway, it's not going to be Joseph's fault. It'll be John Elway because John Elway has showed this time and time again that he's uber competitive. If something doesn't go his way right away, he is not a patient man. He is. I read a great piece about about how he's kind of a coach killer, actually. And they got rid of their offensive coordinator in the middle of the season, even though they only had Trevor Siemian, Brock Osweiler, and Paxton Lynch. It's all Elway's fault. But what I'm saying is, I think Elway doesn't take that well. Elway is the problem, and I think Elway's going to fire Vance Joseph as a scapegoat. He doesn't deserve to be fired.
See, I never said you said he should be. I'm just saying, as a defender of Vance Joseph, I don't think he should be. Elway is likely to do it like you said. I just... there's so many more issues than Vance Joseph on that team.
None of which are Vance Joseph.
It's more of a roster problems.
It really is.
All right, here is a very, very, very left field, just kind of out of nowhere. Here's my guy who could be fired. If they don't make the playoffs, Pete Carroll. I know it's a long shot,
I shouldn't let
but
you finish this point.
That locker room doesn't seem to like each other. They, even though it's not his fault, they haven't been able to fix the O-line throughout his entire time there. It's just... It would shock me, but at the same time, I could see the case for that to happen. That would be kind of my way out there, coach that I think could be fired if they don't make the
playoffs. See, I'm going to step right in and disagree with that. I think that's one of those things that, yes, they haven't had a good O-line, and a lot of that I actually think falls on Pete Carroll because I think he has a lot more to do with the draft picks than any of us could believe or know. And unfortunately, we won't ever know that because most teams don't say who's making the final roster decisions or draft decisions, but it's the fact that the Seahawks are constantly spending late round and undrafted decisions on them. But one of the biggest things for me is I don't see that team wanting to get rid of him nor him retiring because they are still competitive if they get healthy again. If you bring back Sherman next year, Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, all those guys back next year, the NFC still is wide open, even with the teams as good as they are.
Yeah, for me... Do you have something? For me, I don't think they would fire Pete Carroll. I think they might part ways, if anything, because how good Pete Carroll's been for the Seattle Seahawks. Two Super Bowls, blah, blah, blah. I just don't see them firing him, but I could see them parting ways, maybe. I would say, since Eric likes to call me the percentage guy, I'd say there's probably about a 20% chance. I don't think it's going to happen. I wouldn't predict it, but it's possible based off the reason he said about their offensive line blah, blah, blah. I think it's possible, but like I said, it's extremely unlikely. Just based off of even how they've done this season with all the injuries and everything going on, they're still going to finish above 500. That's good. I mean, that's still pretty good. There's just no way I could see them firing Pete Carroll. They'd be crazy. Especially, if they did make the playoffs, maybe the front office thinks that that was the end of an era for the Seahawks under Pete Carroll. Maybe, but I don't see that. Now, next season, if they need to perform next season, Baker missed the playoffs this season. They need to win that division next season if he's going to keep his job moving forward. But for this season, he's safe. Eric, you can join back the conversation now.
So I would say that I, as I said, that's my way out in left field one. So do we want to talk about anyone we didn't mention that we think will get fired come Black Monday?
Yeah. I think we're pretty good on this list. I mean,
I think the only one that I could probably say is we might see Dirk Cotter from the Buccaneers let go or part ways. I think a lot of that is Gruden is very interested in that job. It's very possible. I know he wants to get back into coaching. He may just be using the interest in the Buccaneers as leverage, but it's with the way this Buccaneers season has gone and as much hype as there was around that team, maybe it was partly just because of Hard Knocks, but they had all the prospects in the world to be able to do it. I wouldn't be surprised if the Buccaneers were to split ways with Dirk Cotter.
Honestly, the only way I see him gone is if he's fired. He would be fired because he has his two seasons. He hasn't made the playoffs. He got close last season, but they've been bad this year. I mean, nobody expected that team to go 4-12 or whatever. They're going to end up going 5-11 at best. Probably 4-12. I could see them firing him. If John Gruden is interested, you know they're going to take John Gruden over Dirk Cotter. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And I could definitely see John Gruden returning to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That's the only team I can see him returning to. And I've read something recently that said that he is the only team he's really interested in coming back to is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The validation of that source is the only thing that I'm kind of iffy on, but so I'm not 100% positive, but that's what I've heard, that he's only interested in joining the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So if he is, then I think Dirk Cotter's definitely gone. If he's actually interested, and I've heard he's actually calling former coaches or assistants to see if they would be interested in joining us, if he were to come back as a coach, if they'd be interested in joining him as their assistant, as his assistant coaches.
Well, that shouldn't be a surprise, because when it comes to the coaches and coordinators and everything else, it's a boys' club. It's the fact that everybody's got their ties, their guys that they want to bring with them. It goes on every day, and it's especially with somebody that's been out of the game, it's just obvious he wants to get back into the coaching game. I wouldn't be surprised if he did, just because they've got a young prospect in Jameis Winston at quarterback, and you want to get the most out of him.
Right, and then I would say also, another coach that's kind of up in the air, just based off of how many other issues they have, is Mike McCarthy of the Green Bay Packers. I think he's on a warm seat. I don't think he's on a hot seat nor a cold seat, because excuse myself. back to my point. I think
that was from Mike McCarthy.
Has been average at best. I just don't think, besides Aaron Rodgers, they don't have any other really good pieces. Which you could say is a GM problem, but still, I think they're going to end up blaming it on Mike McCarthy in the end. They're going to tell him basically he should have done better, I think, with what they have, even though they don't really have anything. Even the offensive line isn't that good. We don't, Aaron Rodgers is good, but the offensive line isn't that good, so I could definitely see that as a possibility. Would you agree with that?
I personally don't, just because of the fact that, once again, they lost one of the best players in all of football this year. He Aaron Rodgers really hides a lot of issues on that team. And I wouldn't say that McCarthy's all to blame for it, because that Packers front office really hates buying players out of free agency and going that route. They rarely ever seem to do it, and if they do, it's very, very cheap. It's old guys on their last legs. They don't go for the big contracts, even though they could probably use them, especially on the defensive side of the ball. I think he's getting there, but I definitely wouldn't see it this season, because he can easily go, look, I lost our quarterback, he got hurt. There's not much you can do when you go from a top two quarterback to bottom five quarterback in the league.
Right, and what's that possible? It's the defense. It's the offensive line hasn't even been good under Brett Hundley.
I think a lot of it, though, has to do with the drafts, too. They really haven't been able to stack great drafts back to back recently, and it's a lot of it because they are constantly competitive. They're picking at the back. This season went, there are definitely some questions that'll have to be answered for the front office by Mike McCarthy, and we may see it if it ends up like this again next year. We could see it then. I think a lot of it is going to be them evaluating the team and seeing what they can do and how much really is to put on Mike McCarthy's plate for it.
Which, of course, if Aaron Rodgers is playing the whole season next season, which I think he will, I don't think there's going to be another injury that gets him to the whole season. We can't predict injury, but the chances are it's not going to happen. If they miss the playoffs with Aaron Rodgers in the lineup next season, I think McCarthy's gone. I would lean towards gone for sure. Depending on if they're 500 or depending on how close they are, he might have a little more benefit of the doubt, but I don't think he has any benefit of the doubt. But for me, that's all the coaches. Wouldn't that be it for you, pretty much?
Yeah, that's all I've got, really. There's nothing else that would completely surprise me right now.
Yeah, me either. Well, since Eric decided he was going away or whatever, I guess that's it. Thanks for joining us. Of course, you can follow me at ChrisVSF, John at Dad Socks, I think, now. Dag Socks on Twitter now?
Yes, it is. DADSOX.
Oh, Eric's back. Oh, wow. And, of course, you can follow Eric, come make your final point.
No, let me out of my box.
Very fast.
Let me out of my box.
Clock now. Start.
All right, so I just want to say this is a massive disrespect to me. Thank you all very much for joining us for the Enzo Podcast. Follow Chris on Twitter at ChrisPSF, John at DadSox. Retweet our giveaway, and of course, be back with us on Friday.
He's literally saying the same
Friday.
Stuff I just said.
Yes, I will.
We'll
see you then. Please come back.
The next podcast.
I'm gonna talk over him, even though he thinks that he has me.
I'll wait for this half this podcast.
Either way, we'll
see y'all later.